I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Sports Saturday. Touchdown! Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts,
Mitch Harper and Matt Maimonte. On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
What's up, Cougar Nation? Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. Can't believe it's the final edition of Cougar Sports Saturday in the month of May of 2020, Mitch. This year is flying by. Even though we're still in pandemic mode and social distancing, the time does seem to fly by, especially now that we're getting warmer weather as well.
Yeah, it definitely is, and it gets me. Once Memorial Day is in the rearview mirror, I get ready more excited than ever for the college football season, and we're 96 days away. We're about 14 weeks away till the first full Saturday of college football, keeping our fingers crossed that that's going to happen as scheduled. But, yeah, it's going to be a great show today. We'll have Kalani Sitake joining the program to discuss what his program is going to be doing coming up on Monday with the voluntary workouts.
We want to start things off here with those workouts as we begin the show with the leadoff.
The leadoff. A look at the stories making headlines right now. It's time for the leadoff on Cougar Sports Saturday.
June 1st, 2020, this upcoming Monday, BYU football players will have the opportunity to return to the facility for voluntary workouts. And that is a very exciting thing for sports fans, especially for me. I want college football to start on time more than anyone. And this is that first step that needed to happen, Mitch, in order for that to take place. Players returning to campus, returning to the practice facility, getting in workouts, getting preparation for fall camp. And if this didn't start on time, it could have pushed everything back. But this is starting on June 1st, and that's a great sign for college football.
And it shows that BYU is living up to what they were saying weeks prior. Tom Homo said on social media, the athletic director at BYU, that when, you know, things, as he put it, kicked in, BYU would be ready to go. And when the NCAA announced that voluntary workouts could happen June 1st, 2 days later, BYU announced the same thing. So BYU is willing to, they feel like there's a lot of positive trends in regards to the COVID-19 pandemic, and they're ready to kind of get closer to that new normal as we're in phase yellow, a low-risk phase yellow in the state, except for in Salt Lake City. You know, down in Utah County, they're ready to get things going, and BYU can open up those facilities for football, men's basketball, and women's basketball. It's a multi-phase deal. Some of the other sports will come throughout the month, but football is going to be ready to go, and I'm excited because that means that it gets me optimistic that football will happen on time, because a few weeks ago I really thought, you know, maybe we're going to see college football delayed, or maybe we're going to see a shortened season, conference only. But now it feels like, hey, this can be business as usual to an extent and have the full 12-game schedule and have it as planned.
Yeah, and I've never, Mitch, I'm speaking personally here, and I'm no expert, but I've never bought into the delay. It just never had made sense to me. Typically speaking, we're talking about viruses, you know, the flu comes to mind. I know the flu and COVID-19 are not the same, but usually that's really wreaks havoc in the winter months. And so for me, bumping it back to October, playing in December and January and February, I never understood that. doesn't mean that it couldn't be possible, but for me, it always made the most sense if football was going to happen, that it would happen on time, and you try and get it done before the cold season kicks in play. And with June 1st starting, I think that's more of a possibility. We're still, as you mentioned, we're still 96 days away from football, and we still need to have fall camp and all that. But there's a lot to learn between now and then. But this was that first shoe to drop that keeps us optimistic that it can start on time. And if football's going to be played at all, I strongly believe this, if football is going to be played at all, it's got to start on time, in my opinion. Because then you run the risk of, if you start in October, if COVID-19 returns, and it very well could, then maybe you have to shut down the season. So I think if you can start it on time, that is your best chance to play a full season of football.
You can hit us up on the KSL text line, 57500, Utah Community Credit Union text, KSL text line, 57500. What do you think? Do you think college football will return on time? And maybe another question would be, is there going to be fans in the stands? Because that's still kind of one of the big things that's up in the air. The whole season is still to an extent up in the air a little bit, because there hasn't been any official, hey, we're going to be playing September 3rd. It's just kind of assumed that they're all going to be as scheduled, but still schools haven't officially said everything will start according to plan. But, hey, I think that we're trending in that direction. The stats and the more insight that's coming since March, because I feel like throughout this pandemic, we've just learned more. It's the first time this virus has ever been in the country, in the world, and it's been an opportunity for all of us to learn more about the virus and analyze the stats and analyze how it actually impacts us. And because I'll admit, when I first heard about it back in January, I thought, oh man, if you get something like that, does that kill you? Novel. Like I thought, oh man, I don't want to get that. But the more we learn, and I feel like we've kind of evolved and where we're not, it's not to a point where we're not taking it serious, but you got to adhere to social distancing. Yep. I think we're all going to be better off in the long run. We'll have Kalani Sitake joining us a little bit later in the hour to discuss how BYU will handle these voluntary workouts amid a pandemic and adhere to social distancing and keep that safety at the forefront for these student athletes. So looking forward to that conversation with the head coach, the Cougars.
You know what's interesting to think about too, Mitch, in regards to fans in the stands, is what percentage capacity does it make sense to even do it? Because if it's 25%, what do you make enough money to justify it? Or do you just say, you know what, if we can only do 25%, then it doesn't make sense. But if it's 50%, I don't know the numbers. I'm not a professional in this matter, but I think about movie theaters and half capacity just isn't going to fly for movie theaters. I just don't think there's would be enough money to be made to do it. And so I just wonder, from a sporting perspective, what percentage fans do you say, if we can get 40% in, let's do it. But if not, then we just got to play without fans. And that's something that's got to be sorted out in the coming weeks and months. But that's something to think about, because there's no point in letting a certain number of fans in the gate if it ends up not being profitable for the university.
Yeah, and I think also, too, with if you do bring fans in the stands, you better make sure to have the resources necessary to almost sterilize the entire stadium to the level of a hospital.
Right.
So you're talking about a higher investment in resources to just basically sanitize the place and make sure it's clean. Because, after a game, we'll leave Lavelle Edwards Stadium late at night and, we see the cleaners and everything. But and I'm sure they do a fantastic job, but it's going to have to be a deep dive cleaning after a game is over. Is that financially worth it? Does that negate what you gain from ticket sales? Because I would imagine it might, potentially.
Right.
So, that has to factor into the conversation as well as to whether or not it's worth it to have fans there. I hope we do see fans in the stands, but ultimately it's about the games. And if we can get the games out there, I don't think many fans will complain.
No.
I think if fans do have the opportunity to go, how do you, even if it's not the full capacity, how do you select who's able to go? Is it just by priority, the highest level of the Cougar Club? I don't know how you kind of decipher that and then spread them out, and then they're not in their usual seats. It's a difficult situation all around.
One thing that is also interesting, talking fans in the stands, and I really want to hear from you, Cougar Nation. Text us 57500. You can tweet at Mitch_Harper, at Biamonte Matt, or at KSL Sports. If there are fans allowed in the stands, would you go? If you have to wear a mask, would you go? All those things. One thing that I think does bode well, though, Mitch, is unlike a movie theater or other places, stadiums just don't get used that often. So
true.
You could do that deep cleaning, and then you would have, worst case, 6 days if it's a Saturday to Friday, or you could have 2 or 3 weeks of no use to where you could really clean that and then be sure that no one goes in, and then you would feel good about the next game. So it's going to be really interesting, but ultimately I'm with you. I think at the end of the day, we just want games. If it's just games on TV, I'm good with it, but it would certainly change the game. There's no doubt about it. I think especially in college sports, momentum is a real thing. We have seen that time and time again in the rivalry where momentum swings have changed that game. If you take that element out, it's going to be interesting to see how each and every team is able to kind of navigate that weirdness, because that's not something you're used to doing, playing in front of nobody.
Yeah, we'll have to make sure to ask Kalani Sitake coming up his thoughts on potentially an empty stadium and what he thinks that would impact potentially if that was to happen this fall if the games go according to plan. We got to take a timeout, though. On the other side, we'll get to some questions that BYU football has going into 2020. Besides just simply, when will the season start? What about the bigger questions, the broader picture questions, if BYU is going to improve on these 2-7-6 seasons the past few years? It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back to Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. We're talking football right now in hour number one. Coming up at 12:30. We're going to have the head coach of the BYU football program, Kalani Sitake. He will join the program, so stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. You'll want to hear what the coach has to say about the workouts, and we'll ask him a few other questions about the upcoming season. So 12:30, Kalani Sitake will join the program. Mitch, you wrote a good piece about what was it, a week ago on KSLSports.com, 5 biggest questions for BYU football heading into the 2020 season. You can go check out that full piece on the website. You can follow Mitch underscore Harper as well. And some interesting questions you have there. We'll skip the number one question that you wrote about, which is, when will the season start? I think the positive signs trending towards probably on time, but we'll see. Let's move into a couple other questions you wrote about. What was, of the 5 questions you wrote about, what one interests you the most?
I think the biggest one is, what can we expect from quarterback Zach Wilson? Zach goes into his junior season, and there's a lot of expectations placed on him, and it's a shame that he didn't get an entire spring football to be the number one guy and to be the guy that have a clean bill of health, because throughout his career he has yet to have a spring football where he's the number one quarterback on the depth chart. And he's healthy. Last year, obviously, he had the shoulder surgery and was recovering from that, so he missed spring football. And then he was injured throughout all of last season. I think that played a big part into why we saw a dip in his performance statistically. He even said himself after he came back from the thumb injury, he came back probably a little bit too early. And I think that was a byproduct maybe of guys like Baylor Romney and Jaren Hall showing out so well. Possibly, but I think Zach Wilson, what can we expect from him, is a big question, because I think Zach Wilson has the ability to really lift BYU to a level where they could be a 10-win team potentially at some point in his career. He's that good. He's got the ability to go deep with his passes, but I think he's got to have better decision-making, and that's going to be one of the important aspects to his game. John Beck's a huge believer in Zach Wilson. I put a lot of stock in a guy like John Beck and his opinion. So I think how Zach Wilson performs in 2020 is going to be a huge question that needs to be answered. But I honestly feel, Matt, that he's going to have a huge bounce back year, and he's going to be a great quarterback for BYU. Barring injury, he's going to be BYU's starting quarterback this year.
I hope that you're right. I hope that he does have a bounce back year, because last season was a mixed bag of results. There were moments, and later in the show, in the third hour, we're going to be doing another Cougar Classic, and we're doing last year's win versus USC. And you watch that game, and I think that was Zach Wilson's best game of last year. And I think it was probably his second best game he's ever played for BYU, behind the bowl game. And there were a lot of moments in that game where he looked like a really solid college football quarterback. But there were other moments, and this is, to answer your question, this is what I would expect from Zach Wilson if he wants to win the job and keep the job. Because I think the margin for error, whoever gets the starting quarterback job, and I do believe it is Zach who will have the first crack at it, but you've got to be consistent and you've got to be good. We can't be having multiple pick six games. We can't be having games where your completion percentage isn't good. You've got to be good because there is enough talent around you on the offensive side of the football that you need to deliver. This is the year. You have a really good offensive line. You've got one of the best tight ends to ever play at BYU. You have a good core of running backs. The wide receivers, there's some talent there. You got to figure that out, but getting Neil Pau back helps. So if it's Zach or anyone else, Mitch, they've got to be consistent. And there were times in that USC game where there was just a little too much Manziel, where he's running around and the play breaks down. And I want Zach or whoever wins the job to run the offense efficiently, distribute the ball to the playmakers. And so that's my expectations, and I hope that Zach takes that step forward because you can. The talent is obvious. Zach Wilson has the talent, but the consistency has not been there, and that has to be there from him or whoever the quarterback is. Got to be consistent week in and week out. You bring up John Beck. By his junior and senior year, you know what he was? Consistent. Week in and week out, we knew what we were getting from John Beck, and we need BYU quarterbacks to be consistent once again.
Yeah, and I think that if Zach Wilson's healthy, I think he will be that. I really do. I mean, you go back to his freshman season, you know, even games against Utah, the bowl game. I mean, Zach Wilson was playing exceptionally well, and I remember even Dylan Colley in the post-game press conference after that bowl game saying, Zach Wilson's got the ability to be one of the best quarterbacks to ever come through the program. And that's high praise when you're talking about the Colley family saying that because they know BYU football inside and out. So Zach Wilson's got a lot of expectations placed on him. And I think also, too, that the guys like Jaron Hall and Baylor Romney nipping at his heels, ready to step in at a moment's notice, I think that'll be beneficial for Zach Wilson. He's even said he invites the competition. He invites that. He likes it. He wants to get better. I think these quarterbacks have a good rapport with one another. The fact that none of them entered the transfer portal when we see all the time quarterbacks leaving left and right, they all said, hey, we're going to stay on board. I think that speaks to their one love for BYU, but also I think that they also like the competition as well, and I think Zach Wilson will be better for it too. And I do think he's going to be that first quarterback, no doubt about it. And I think he's going to keep that spot because I think that he is the guy that has the highest ceiling, the highest potential out of all the quarterbacks in the room.
I know it's a limited sample size, but when I think about last season, the quarterback that ran the offense the best and looked the best at any given moment in the season was Jaron Hall against Utah State. And so that's the only thing that brings me pause is when I think about Jeff Grimes' offense with Aaron Roderick and that collaborative effort, the quarterback who ran it the best from my eyes watching was Jaron Hall. And so I do think Zach Wilson would get that first crack, but there's something about Jaron Hall, Mitch, that still interests me. It intrigues me just because of what we saw in limited moments. He was so efficient. He ran the offense. He was quick decision-making. I don't believe that Jaron Hall will be the first quarterback to get a snap, but I want what we saw in that Utah State game from Jaron Hall. That's what I need to see from Zach Wilson. Understanding the offense, quick decisions, consistent. So if I don't see that after the first couple of weeks, I'm going to want to change, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the fact that Zach last year was just injured throughout or recovering from injuries, I think that's the one thing that makes you kind of pause on Zach Wilson's play last year. If he's having similar issues this season, then yeah, I think the coaching staff will turn to a guy like Jaron Hall or Baylor Romney because they feel very confident in any one of those guys to win. And you're right, Jaron Hall was spectacular against Utah State, and it was one of the best games BYU had last season in terms of just the aesthetics and how BYU's offense was humming. It was a thing of beauty to watch and see that offense execute against a Utah State team that was the favorite going into that game. So, yeah, I think BYU is in a great situation quarterback-wise because the talent that they have is really good. I mean, I can't recall many years, at least since, you know, the days of Jim McMahon, Mark Wilson, Steve Young, that you can count off three quarterbacks like this since those guys back 40 years ago. I mean, this is a really good trio of quarterbacks that if they were guys that entered the portal, they would have Power 5 programs going after them. I think that speaks to their talent level, and I think BYU, because of that, is going to be in a good spot with their quarterback play in 2020.
Another question you had that I thought was interesting was the defensive question. What will BYU's defense look like? And specifically, I think what interests me the most is I would add to your question, what is going to come of a couple position changes? Zane Anderson being one of them. Peyton Wilgard, does he stay at linebacker? I mean, there's so many moving parts. Jackson Kafusi was playing running back in the spring. Does he go back to linebacker? So there's a lot of potential shakeup on that defensive side of the football. And and that won't be sorted out until fall camp.
Yeah, and you could see, I think BYU primarily, their base will be a 4-3 defense, but don't be surprised to see five defensive backs. I mean, BYU has really tried to make a concerted effort to improve their secondary. The cornerbacks, I think they got better, they got more depth than they have in quite a few years, and they're now experienced. And then the safeties with Zane Anderson, Troy Warner. If Troy Warner goes maybe to cornerback, you also got George Udo. So there's a lot of intriguing options in BYU's defense. And you can see all the questions up on KSLSports.com. We got to take a break, though. Traffic and weather coming up next, and then Kalani Sitake, the head coach of the Cougars, coming up next here on Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three. Cougars by 20.
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back to Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio, your legacy home of the BYU Cougars. I've got to say, once Memorial Day goes in the rearview mirror, I get even more hype for the upcoming college football season. So with that in mind, it's only fitting that right now we welcome in the head football coach of the BYU Cougars, Kalani Sitake. Kalani, welcome to Cougar Sports Saturday.
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being on, Kalani. And we know your time is precious, so we'll just jump right in here and get after it. Big things coming up on June 1st in your program, and I think a lot of places around the country, as the athletic department announced last week, a multi-phase plan that athletic facilities will start to open up for voluntary workouts. So I'm just curious, Kalani, for the players in your program that are going to volunteer to work out, what will that look like on Monday as you try to keep players' safety at the forefront amid this pandemic?
Well, I think Tom has done a great job, our athletic director, Tom Homo, and, you know, working with our administration at proposing these plans on how we're going to work out. And communication has been awesome as far as, you know, we're going to have our guys check in, we're going to check temperatures. We're going to be able to have them utilize spacing in our workouts and, but, you know, I think we have four different workout groups that are, you know, none of them are going to be over 30 people. And so I think having them, because it is voluntary, allowing them the chance to decide if they want to be here. I think most of the guys are going to be here and do the workouts. And coaches can't be involved with it, but we can do our virtual meetings during the week as well. So we'll do that with our talk about our technique and scheme and strategies and all that stuff we'll be able to handle during the week. But what we've been doing since April 25th, you know, so I think right now it just makes sense for them to get back and then to do the work. And I've been really pleased that we have the certain phases that we can go through and hopefully trend to everything being normal, which means playing football. And I've been really pleased with how our leadership has done a great job in the church and in our school to allow us to try to get things back to normal, which means football, playing football in the fall.
You said coaches won't be involved coming up on Monday because it's all volunteer for the players. But, you know, has the NCAA and your administrators and Tom Homo kind of given you any insight as to when maybe you guys could start practice up again? Because we know that spring football was cut short. Is there any chance that those practices could be maybe given back to you guys and programs around the country?
From my understanding, that those won't be available, you know, so that I think the time that we move right into football will probably be fall camp. And so right now, allowing us the opportunity to have the voluntary workouts is a huge step for football, but also for our program. I've been really pleased with the way the guys have conducted themselves throughout the pandemic and the quarantine. So I think right now, this move into this next transition is going to make a lot of sense for us. And as coaches, we have to just be mindful of the situation, but also, you know, use good practice habits as far as teaching and learning and meeting. And so we're doing that, and we have great guidance, and we've been able to communicate with our athletic department really well and in all the different phases that we're going to reach. And so right now, the next, you know, couple weeks and seeing how it goes, I think this is a great start to everything. And we'll start working on our meeting times as a staff as well. But trying to transition that in the right timing with in coordination with our administration and the school and athletic department gives us.
We're joined by Kalani Sitake here on Cougar Sports Saturday. And in regards to spring practices being in the rearview mirror, you're not going to get those back, and then going forward towards fall camp, how much carryover will there be, maybe from a depth chart perspective, position battles, or is it going to be kind of a blank slate situation when fall camp starts?
Well, I think we kind of know going into after the six practices, we kind of had an idea of what our guys were doing and, you know, what we have going into the season. I think it sucks not having the nine practices that we could have solidified some spots and ramp up some more competition. But for the most part, we saw there was nothing that was too surprising to us. You know we have a good, strong amount of players that are coming back with a lot of experience and a good amount of depth. Especially the O-line group, you know. And so the difficult part about dealing with injuries is that you have to try different guys at different positions, a quarterback, for example. But the great result is that you have three guys that have game-time experience and starting experience. So that's a good thing for us. And we've talked about getting depth a lot better here since I got here, you know, that not having a huge drop-off from one to two. And I think we're heading in the right way, you know, right direction right now. And there's a reason why Kyrus Tonga and Matt Bushman decided to come back this year instead of entering the draft. I think they have a lot of expectations for this team, and they've done a great job with their leadership. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, our guys just kind of going through the offseason conditioning portion of their schedule and doing that, but then easing our way into the fall camp schedule. And that hopefully it all trends the right direction, and not just with our football team, but with everything that's going on in society. So hopefully we get things back to normal as much as possible by the time we hit August.
I'm glad you bring up the depth just moments ago here, Kalani, because you got a lot of talented players in your football program. You've worked to improve from the scholarship players on down to the preferred walk-ons and walk-ons. And now there's been an interesting element to this offseason and maybe the roster construction in terms of missionaries returning home early. What's kind of like the latest on all, not necessarily each missionary, but in general, most of the missionaries that came home earlier, are they going back, or kind of what's the trends you're seeing on that front? Will these guys be staying?
There's a high number of them that are getting reset back out. They're getting their callings. They're getting, I don't know how they call that, but yeah, they're getting reissued a different position, place to go work. And so they're starting to get re-released in the next couple of weeks. And then there's some that are still deciding on whether or not they want to go back out and finish their mission. And we're encouraging them to go do that. You know, being a return missionary myself, I know that, it seems like the last 6 months were the most productive of my mission, meaning that that's when I really felt like I had things going, you know, and that mad dash, you remember those are certain missions. You remember that sense of urgency towards the end, knowing that you won't be able to do this ever again. And the sense of, I got to get going and I got to do as much as I can. That's something that I live with and I am proud of now, you know, many decades, two decades after serving a mission, that I feel really accomplished knowing that I did that. It's since I'm not much of a distance runner, a lot of people say it's kind of like the sprint towards the end, your last lap or whatever it may be. And since I'm not going to be running any miles or marathons in the near future, that's probably the only thing I can draw back from is that, you know, every day, I've mentioned this before, that I played at BYU and I love my time here, but I don't think about my career at BYU as a football player every day. I do think about my mission every day, though. That is never, since I got home in my 21 years of age, I think about my mission every day, and really proud of what I've been able to do. So try to get the missionaries to go back out and do that and have those experiences. I think it'd be really important, but it's their decision. And, you know, we have to maneuver and shift numbers around if we have to, but I think the most important thing is try to get them to finish out.
What's the plan if a player or a member contracts the virus as people start to come back to the facility?
Well, the plan is to make sure that we get ahead of it, you know, and that's why them checking in and being at the right distance, but also checking their temperatures and knowing when to let guys into workouts, I think it'll be really important. And we have a lot of people monitoring what they're doing. I think that's going to be the most important thing. The last thing we want is a guy to come in there that has the virus. But we want to, you know, with that and testing, I think we're going to do what we can. And I think, you know, Tom's established a really good plan in what we can get done in the next few weeks leading up to the fall camp. So I think we follow those guidelines to a T, and we're really strict with it. And I think if we do that, I think we'll be in a really good place. I've been really pleased with the way, like I said, the leadership of our administration of Upper Campus, from our president to our athletic director to what I've seen from the support staff. It's been going really well. So I imagine that they've kept that in mind. And, you know, it's probably hard to go through all the details that we have, but we've met about it and communicated about what's expected from everyone that's there and our players. And then also, you know, just giving them, educating them on awareness and how to take care of themselves and look for symptoms and ways to protect themselves and others.
Coach, we got to take a break here on Cougar Sports Saturday. We'll be back for more with Coach Itake after this break. Welcome back to Cougar Sports Saturday, and we still have Kalani Sitake, the head coach of the BYU football program, with us. So let's get back to Coach Sitake.
I try to think of social distancing for college football, Kalani. It's very, you know, high emotions and interacting with others. I think of, like, the locker room setting. I mean, have you guys maybe had to maybe reconfigure the locker rooms at both the indoor practice facility and the stadium in terms of making sure players have those six feet? I mean, how is that type of stuff going to look in this new world we're kind of entering in?
Well, I think the key is having different workout groups. You know, we're in the years past, we've had workouts with the whole team. And I think now breaking them down into four groups, and, you know, since they are voluntary, it's not like they're going to be all full, but I think The majority of the guys will be here. I imagine 90% of our team will be here doing those workouts. And you know, some of them are going through weddings and things like that in the next little bit. But I think what's important is that we just keep them organized that way, and that we have our squat racks and everything with some distancing, and then just reminding them, whether it's signs or people that are there, the workers that are there, our coaches, strength coaches that are there, just reminding them of you know, proper social distancing technique, things like that. I think as we start doing that, protecting ourselves and protecting everyone, just to give everyone safety, I think we'll be in a good spot. And the plan in place, I'm really excited about. This was thought about, you know, weeks ago when we put this whole thing together, and I'm really excited about the next portion, the next phase. So far, it's gone really well, and it's gone. You know, one thing I know is that our people here, and the leaders that I've seen from here, they're really good at adjusting and making any transition that we have to. So we'll do whatever is best for the players, keep them safe. But in the meantime, I know that we're starting to work towards being normal and get things back to normal, which means that they have to train, and that's accommodating. That's going to be really important for their health later on in the season.
We're joined by the head coach of the BYU football program, Kalani Sitake, for a few more moments here on Cougar Sports Saturday. Kalani, I'm a big fan of the secondary logos that BYU has. We've seen you wear them from time to time, the Beat Digger, the Sailor Coug. And last year there was a really great and popular promotion with the fans for College Football 150 with that throwback logo against Washington. Are there any plans this upcoming season for anything like that? Maybe a new uniform or using a different logo in some capacity?
You know what? I'm probably the wrong guy to ask on that. I assume we're going to be seeing royal and navy blue out there, and we'll probably have a mixture of I know the all white look is a popular one as well. But I don't know. I think there's more things on our mind right now, but we'll get to that. And, you know, I've always expressed my opinions, but I think David Amadova, the marketing team, and then working with our equipment room is going to be – our guys are just – I think right now there's going to be so much things, like, as far as people just – the urgency just to get back to football. I don't think the uniforms are going to mind as much as they have in years past.
Can you envision a situation, Kalani, with this – college BYU football games at Lavelle Edwards Stadium without fans potentially? I mean, nothing's been decided, of course, full disclosure, but I mean, do you think that, how would that feel for you as just like a coach and a competitor, you think?
Well, we love our fans, right? And so anytime we can be close to them and entertain them, that's just the more real time that you can see them being happy or excited. And, And I think we'll just do whatever. I mean, I don't know if I can predict what's going to happen. I know a lot of people have, but I want to be optimistic and stay positive and think that things will work out in the end when we get there. But if not, then we'll adjust. And our guys will be ready to play, you know, and we'd love to see fans in the stands. But if not, then we'll just compete on the field. And it really shouldn't matter whether or not fans are in the stands, really, to the players. True competitors should be excited to play regardless. But it can be helpful to have that noise. You know, maybe we can manufacture the noise or something. I don't know. But more importantly, I just think that just having the fans there and excited, I think that's part of the deal. But, you know, this is a different circumstance. And then we will just have to accommodate if there's some guidelines that restrict attendance and things like that. But hopefully we get to a point where that won't be an issue.
Yeah, it is different times. Last thing for you, Kalani, before we get out, because we know your time's precious, you know, just real quick, have you taken Jeff Grimes' advice with going out and doing all the hiking and stuff? Because I'll admit, I look at Jeff Grimes' Twitter and I go, man, how he's just hiking all around the clock. He never stops.
Well, I mean, I'm going to work out and things like that. I took advantage of trying to support all the local businesses by ordering tons of food. Then the backlashes that I have to lose the weight because I probably ordered, my eyes are way bigger than my stomach, believe it or not. And so, you know, I've been working the last few weeks trying to get this weight off. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of hikes involved in all that. But I can see the view from here. It looks nice. And I've hiked the Y before. And when I got up to the top, it was what I thought it looked like, you know. So my kids, they'll love doing it. And so they've got me to do a bunch of TikTok videos. So it wouldn't be that hard for them to convince me to go on a hike with them.
Well, thanks, Kalani. We appreciate it. And take care, stay safe. And we're looking forward to football ramping up.
Appreciate you guys. Go Cougs.
Thanks, Kalani.
Great stuff there from the head coach, Kalani Sitake. Anything jump out to you from what he had to tell us just now, Mitch?
Yeah, I think that one of the big things is that, you know, there's not going to be any makeup for the spring football practices. So the voluntary workouts are a significant thing, and BYU is going to get after it on Monday. But then the next actual monitored practice that the coaching staff will be involved with is fall camp. So I thought that was pretty notable. But I also think, too, Matt, from Kalani's commentary in these past two segments, his commentary about the school, the administrators, Tom Homo, how organized and how much praise he was giving to them, that they've had a plan. They've been laying this out for a couple weeks now. They've been ready to go, and they've been in communications. And it just seems like there's been at least from what Kalani has been saying, that it's been a well-oiled machine, if you will, that there's been a lot of communication and that they are being very progressive and adjusting accordingly to fit the needs and the safety of the student athletes when they do get back. So I thought that was a positive as well to hear that from Kalani.
I really liked what he said about missionaries and how he's handling the situation. And I thought it was really candid of him when he talked about how he thinks about his mission every day. And he quite frankly doesn't think about playing BYU football every day, but he thinks about his mission every day, and he's encouraging those missionaries in those situations that, hey, you know, it's up to you, but a mission is a great thing, and if you can do it, you should do it. You know, Down Holker's an example of a guy who came back because of the pandemic, and he's going back out, and he did mention there are some guys who are still deciding, but I thought that was really candid and interesting commentary from Coach Itake about how much his mission meant to him and how he is encouraging players in that situation to make the best decision for you. But, you know, he's clearly saying, hey, a mission is a great thing. It's something I love. It's something I think about every day. If you can go and finish it. He specifically mentioned the last 6 months is when he felt the best. And people who are in that situation, he's kind of sharing that information with them. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, football's always going to be there. You know, BYU is not going to give up on these missionaries if they do decide to go. And that's one of the great things about BYU is that they don't let the guys that are serving for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints end up losing a scholarship because they're serving the church. Other schools, they might do that. They might recruit over a guy, and they come back home, and there's no scholarship waiting for them. But, yeah, I thought that was a really good commentary from Kalani, and I put up a piece on KSLSports.com. You can go read it to get the quotes and get the MP3, the download, to listen to the full audio if you missed any parts of that from Kalani Sitake up on KSL Sports. Cougars.com. So great stuff there from the head coach of the Cougars, because we're 96 days till kickoff, and we're about, you know, fall camp starts early August. So before we know it, Matt, it's about 2 months out. So this was critical to get back to some voluntary workouts, and it sounds like BYU is going to find a way to adhere to social distancing and make this thing work.
I'm curious, too, since there won't be any coaches there, I'm curious who the leaders are going to be from the football side of things. I mean, you would expect Zach Wilson as a junior quarterback, kind of the face of the program, to be one of those leaders. But who else is going to be encouraging guys to show up and get their work in? And this is a formative time for not just BYU football, but for any team, because this is an opportunity. I believe this, Mitch. This is an opportunity for teams to separate themselves, to get a step ahead, because everyone is behind. Some teams didn't even play any spring football. And so this is a real opportunity to get a step ahead of other teams. If football starts on time and BYU takes advantage of this period of time, they could be poised to have a 10-win season. But if they're not prepared and they're not ready and they're behind, because the schedule's so hard, they could be looking at a season with no bowl game. So this is a really important time.
It really is, and I think guys that'll be leaders are Matt Bushman. I think he's going to be a huge leader. I think even some maybe lesser-known individuals on the roster that have a prominent voice, like a fullback tight end, Kyle Griffiths. There's leaders in the program that are vocal leaders. They got these seniors have to lead the way. BYU seniors, the great BYU teams always have the great senior leadership. I always think back to like 2006 is the benchmark for great senior leadership. John Beck, Cameron Jensen, those are what you want out of leaders, and BYU needs that if they want to honestly achieve that great season and have that banner year that they've been kind of craving as a independent over the last few years. But we've got to take a break, though. Second hour, we'll set the stage for hour number two, some basketball transfer news. We'll get to that. Traffic and weather up next, and then also we'll get some updates on the protest in Salt Lake City around 6 South, so we'll get some updates on that. So stay tuned. It's Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Touchdown! Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
All right, welcome back into Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. KSL News time is 106 PM. We'll keep you updated on some of the protests, peaceful protests right now in Salt Lake City, up on KSLNewsRadio.com and throughout the day here on KSL News Radio. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte. Hour number two of Cougar Sports Saturday here. If you missed any part of the show, make sure to go to KSLSports.com and subscribe to our podcast. We really appreciate that. We appreciate Kalani Sitake joining us. Great stuff there from the head coach of the Cougar football program. But now we're going to switch gears, Matt. We're going to get over to BYU basketball. And the Cougs have been involved with a lot of talented transfers, but they missed out on a talented one in Mac McClung.
Yeah, and initially I was disappointed by that. But as the time has passed, I think it's a blessing in disguise for the BYU basketball program. I think when you think about what BYU basketball needed, when the season ended and you're thinking, okay, now we got Wyatt Lowell eligible, Richard Harwood's here, then you get the commitment from Matt Harms, you're thinking, wow, this team defensively can be elite. If only they had a couple more shooters, this could be a well-rounded team. Well, I think there's a guy in the program that, if he's healthy, Mitch, could be the answer to that exact question. And that guy is Jesse Wade. He's had the knee injury. He's been battling it for a long time. But if he's healthy, and all indications are he is healthy and he's ready to go, if he can return to form, remember, Mitch, this was a number one recruit in the state of Utah in 2015, scoring over 27 points per game his senior year in high school, shooting 45% from three. Now, he's a little undersized, but because this team is so tall and so good defensively, you can afford to play Alex Barstello and him together. If he can return to form, I think BYU's got the guy they need to answer the question about shooting. And so, initially, disappointed McClung didn't come, but I actually think it'll be a good thing for the basketball program.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Mac McClung picking Texas Tech over BYU, it's just unfortunate because Mac McClung really would have provided a guard that just BYU simply doesn't have, and he would have put elevated BYU, I think, into preseason top 25 status. I think the nation would have been buzzing about BYU even more than they already are. But hey, it's okay. I think Texas Tech might be the better fit, honestly, because he walks in McClung, and now he's given the keys, I think, to be the starting point guard for Texas Tech. Whereas I think at BYU, he probably would have continued the same role he did at Georgetown, being a combo guard with Alex Barcelo, because I don't think they want to just diminish Barcelo's opportunities to be the point guard because I think Barcelo feels like he can be a number one point guard for BYU next season. So I think it's all going to work out. BYU's got some options still going forward. I think Jesse Wade's interesting. I hope that he is healthy because he was really good at Davis High. I remember his recruitment, and he picked Gonzaga and was
– really good is offensive, Mitch. Number one, really, number recruit in the state.
But BYU, I mean, honestly, didn't recruit him that much. I mean, he was kind of just an undersized guy, though. I mean, that was the thing is that his recruitment was where – I mean, Gonzaga, he was the last guy on the bench at Gonzaga. I mean, so he's someone that at the collegiate level really hasn't done anything in college basketball that makes you think that he could – you know, outdo what Mac McClung could have potentially provided. But still, there's hope because he has been around the program. He's seen how this program works, and he's putting in the work himself to get back to full health. So I do like that aspect. But they are involved with some transfers still. Davion Williamson out of East Tennessee State, he's going to decide this weekend. He's got it down to BYU, Wake Forest, San Diego State, Georgetown, and Tulsa. It looks like Wake Forest might be the favorite, though, for Davion because his former head coach at East Tennessee State is now at Wake Forest, and then also he's a native of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So BYU might not get him, but there's also Booth Gotch. There's also a kid from Maryland and Cyril Smith, Cam Mack, Jaron Carey from Syracuse. So there's some options there.
Yeah, and I just don't know if BYU needs to add anybody.
They need another guard. They got to get another guard.
I think they're okay, actually. You got Barcelo. You hope Trevin Nell takes a step. Now, I think they're okay if Jesse Wade is healthy and can give you 20.
I don't think you want to rely on risks or ifs. I think you want to have the more of a surefire thing. But also, Coach Pope has said he wants to get a guy that might sit out for a season.
Yes,
but
that would make sense to me. And you got to, if they do bring someone, that's great. But they've got to buy in. You do not want to mess with the locker room. Coach Pope talked about that over and over and over again. Best locker room in America. Whoever you bring in, you got to be careful that he's going to add to the program rather than maybe get a talented guy, but he hurts the locker room and then the team suffers as a whole. So,
all right,
got to take a break here on Cougar Sports Saturday. On the other side, we're going to go live with the SpaceX launch. So we'll get to a break, and we'll carry that coverage live after this.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Man, that was cool. Thanks for sticking with us here on Cougar Sports Saturday as we took coverage of the SpaceX launch that took place about 15 minutes ago. That was really, really cool.
Mitch. Yeah, that was awesome stuff, guys. I didn't realize it's been a decade since we launched from U.S. soil with U.S. astronauts. Pretty cool stuff. We just listened to history here on KSL News Radio.
And one of my favorite movies growing up, guys, was Apollo 13. And I've watched that movie so many times. It's a good movie. So to see a current version of that it's kind of surreal, honestly.
Yeah. Really, really cool stuff. And it got us thinking in coming up here. Which BYU athletes are ready to launch into star status? Yep. We got to play off the SpaceX,
Absolutely.
And we'll play that. We'll have that coming up a little bit later in the show.
First, though, we got to get to one of our favorite segments here on Cougar Sports Saturday.
The Cougar Sports Saturday Top 5. Mitch and Matt clash in a weekly battle of BYU sports knowledge. The Cougar Sports Saturday Top 5.
Not going to lie, guys. I feel like I missed an opportunity to do some sort of rocket
space-centered top five. I didn't even put two and two together that the launch was happening today.
Yikes.
Feel like I should have had some sort of best. What do you even do?
Top five space movies. I could probably list five right now. Gravity is excellent. Apollo 13 is good.
Interstellar.
Interstellar is
so
fantastic.
Underrated.
Mitch, are we missing any?
Not that I can think of. I mean, another top five list would have been just top five BYU football players that would qualify to be a most likely to be an astronaut. Would you do that?
That's a great one.
How do I even find that kind of information out?
I don't know.
How many calls
sometimes
do I have
your
to
top
make?
Five list, I go, how did he find this information?
Great point.
Fair enough. But hey, listen, I gotta say, the Mountain Dew thing was fun. We're gonna bring it back to BYU. This week, Dave Meekham, the board op, said he felt left out because he's not a Mountain Dew drinker. He drinks
it's
diet.
It's never too late drinks, to start.
He drinks diet, so he felt left out hearing about all the fun flavors that he hasn't tried.
Good news. Baja Blast, zero. No calories, no sugar. So, great. We got to get Dave a Baja Blast. Now, let me warn you, it doesn't even compare to the real thing, but hey, it's better than nothing.
All right, well, this week we are going to be, this kind of fits because we look at who are kind of the stars of BYU sports in Ooh. Today's world. And I'm talking, into the professional leagues. And one guy that we talk about a lot here on Cougar Sports Saturdays, the quarterback
Taysom Hill?
In New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Taysom Hill. Kind of a shooting to the stars, if you will, last year, kind of came on the scene, and now every NFL team's trying to repeat what he has done. But we talked a lot about him last week, and it got me thinking of some of his best games in a BYU uniform.
So
Taysom Hill. So that's what we have today. The top five performances by Taysom Hill in a game in his BYU career. There is no order.
I was just going to say, I would have been okay with an order for this one,
so
Mitch.
Now you're okay with it.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is one week where the order can matter.
Well, thank you, Dallin.
I don't understand, man. I try, throw you a bone. I'm like, yeah, I don't like the order. I'll give no. Now all of a sudden they want an order.
Here, let me give you a little tip. If the choices is in the thousands, like that one with the BYU basketball player, no list. When it's only a 20 or 30, then the list.
All right. Well, no order this week, okay. So someone's going to win. We're going to get a lot of dings. Sorry, Dave. I know you're missing out on the buzzers, but hopefully they not too many buzzers here. But we are...
Oh, geez.
Well, we got one to start. So Mitch is going to go first. Matt got the win on the BYU... Or sorry, the Mountain Dew list last week. So, Mitch, go ahead with your first guess. Taysom's best games in a BYU uniform.
2013, Texas, 259 rushing yards.
Waiting for it.
There we go. Just the dramatic pause, Mitch, for you. That's probably if I had these ranked, which I do, that one is number one, right? 259 yards on the ground. We talked about the Texas game last week, the 2014, but we also mentioned this 2013 game. And I said that was Taysom's performance in that 2013 game was more impressive to me than the 2014, though still impressive.
Even though he had single-digit completions in that game?
Yeah, that's tough, but 250 yards and three touchdowns on the ground.
You're right.
Whatever, throw for 129
I'm
yards.
Sorry, Taysom.
We're not going to worry about that one. Okay, Matt, to you.
I'm going
to
stick with Hook'em Horns 2014.
Yeah, another easy one. We just talked about that game last week, but three touchdowns on the ground with 99 yards, 181 yards through the air. He was great in both games. Those were two pretty easy ones to put on there.
Yeah, those were definitely two easy ones. I'm going to say for number three, I'm going to stay with a Texas opponent and go 2013 against Houston.
Yeah, nice. No doubt. 417 passing yards in that game. For Taysom Hill, which is the most in his college career. It was the most, only time he'd ever hit, over 400 yards, which is incredible. Four touchdowns in that game. Big time numbers, and that's to go along with 128 on the ground. So over 500 total yards in that game. I mean, it's incredible.
One of the best games that, honestly, BYU has had during the independence era, in my opinion, and it's a game that, sadly, I can't find anywhere on the interwebs. I can't find a replay of that game anywhere, but, that was a classic BYU in Houston in 2013. I'm excited that BYU in Houston are going to renew their series coming up this year, because I just feel like programs like Houston that are top of the line in terms of the Group of Five conferences, those are great programs to play for BYU on as an independent. So really excited to see BYU play Houston again. But that one in NRG Stadium back in 2013, that was a classic.
Yeah. Now it gets interesting because there's a couple games in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with 2014 at home against Virginia. Oh.
Let's see here.
Ouch. That was a great game.
I'm going to go with 2016 against Utah.
Back to me?
Yeah, back to
I'm
going to
go
you.
2015, even though we didn't finish the game, Nebraska.
Yeah, I threw that. That one is number five, I guess, the kind of the final entry. Because he didn't complete the game. We talked about this on the Cougar Classics a couple weeks ago. But, I mean, he was extremely impressive in that game. And if he's not injured and he plays that full game out, I mean, he was incredible. 268 yards through the air and a touchdown, 72 yards, two touchdowns on the ground. He was dominant in that Nebraska game, and I think I weighted maybe the Power Five teams a little more, right? When you're putting up performances like that against Texas and against Nebraska, like even more impressive than putting it up against maybe some lesser competition. I kind of took that into consideration when I picked these games here. But that leaves Mitch with the last pick.
Notched at two.
I'm taking some notes here on that. Dallin gave some good intel there.
Oh, boy.
but still, I'm kind of struggling. Let's see. You know what? I'm going to go against Dallin's notes. I'm going to go curveball here.
Ooh.
2014 UConn.
Oh. Boom!
You see what I tried to do there, though, right? I tried to steer him off course.
That was nice. That was nice.
Mitch didn't take the bait. Well done, Mitch.
I would have missed it anyways because I was going to drop a 2012 Hawaii on you.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. That's a good case. His first ever start. That's,
first ever start. The long touchdown run. Threw the ball well in that game.
Yeah, not bad. But the UConn game, yeah, 300 yards, three touchdowns. Two touchdowns on the ground. I mean, again, you know, not as good a competition as the Texas and Nebraskas, but equally impressive for Taysom there to start the season, and then they went on and beat Texas the next week. So, yeah, I mean, he had a bunch of incredible games. Mississippi State in 2016 was another one I thought.
Yep.
2013, Boise State is another one that I also thought about.
Yes.
He had quite a few pretty good college games.
It's crazy to think he missed so many games. I mean, I hate to be the what could have been guy, but what could have been if he had been healthy that 2015 season, 2014 even. I mean,
yep.
We probably missed out on another 10-ish great games of Taysom Hill because of injury.
Yeah, BYU would have gone undefeated in 2014,
yeah,
with Taysom Hill, or at least 11-1, I think.
I agree.
They would have been at least an 11-win team, but yeah, 2014 UConn was a season opener. I remember that was it was kind of a dicey game. It was a Thursday night ESPN game, going across country, and there was some questions. And UConn had a new head coach, but then Taysom put to rest any sort of maybe doubt or concerns about first game jitters, if you will, because the go fast, go hard offense was in that second year under Robert and I, and it felt like Taysom kind of hit his groove, and that's why 2014 had so much potential with Taysom at quarterback.
All right, Dave, give it to me.
You lose. Good day, sir.
Good day, Matt.
Well, gotta love it.
Well deserved. Good stuff. Yeah. So Taysom Hill, gotta love him, huh?
You gotta love him. He's ascending like the rocket that we just witnessed.
And speaking of ascending, we're gonna be giving you some BYU athletes who could be ascending into orbit in the near future. We'll give you our rising stars of BYU athletics after this break here. Stay with us. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. Glad to have you back here on Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte. Been a great show so far. If you missed any of it, you can check out our podcast feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you don't listen to podcasts, you should. And you can head over to KSLSports.com podcast and subscribe there. We had Kalani Sitake joined us in the first hour. Some great stuff from him on the return of players down to Provo for voluntary practice and a few other notes as well. Well worth a listen. It's been a good show so far.
Yeah, it really has. And one of the historic things that took place during the show was the launch of SpaceX just earlier this hour. And it got us thinking, Matt, you know, we're talking and thinking about how to tie in SpaceX to the show. And, you know, BYU players who are ready to launch into star status in the 2020-2021 year. We've narrowed this down to football and men's basketball. So I'll kind of let you take the lead here, Matt. I'm curious to hear who you think are guys that, you know, are ready to just become stars of BYU sports in the upcoming year.
I chose one guy from football and basketball. I'll start with basketball.
Okay.
And I think the one guy who is ready to launch is Matt Harms, the transfer from Purdue. I think that that guy, when you're talking about star status, play on the floor or on the field, that matters, but there's got to be another element to it to be a star. And I think Matt Harms has that personality to where BYU fans are just going to love this guy. Plus, you got the game. When was the last time BYU had a guy who blocks two shots a game? It just seems like it's been a minute. He's going to be swatting shots left and right. The Rock's going to be going crazy. He's going to be engaged with the fans. I mean, the interview he did with us a couple weeks back, which you can find on the podcast feed, he just has that personality that if he takes a step forward and becomes an NBA-caliber player, which some believe he can be, if he proves to be that type of guy with his personality, I just think BYU fans are going to love Matt Harms.
Yeah, Matt Harms is a great pick. For me, if on basketball, because like you, I chose a football player and a basketball guy. For basketball, it's Alex Barcelo. I think that's why BYU feels that even though they lost out on Mac McClung earlier this week, Mac McClung goes to Texas Tech, I still think that this coaching staff is pretty optimistic about their chances to have a lot of success, especially with the backcourt they have because of Alex Barcelo, who can play both spots on the guard line and defensively.
Yeah.
He was fantastic last year, but I see now this upcoming season, his offensive game is going to be a bigger priority within BYU's offense. Last year, he was the third best three-point shooting player in all of college basketball at 48% shooting the three. He was fantastic. It kind of got overlooked a little bit because of how great Jake Toulson was and the volume that Jake Toulson had, but Alex Barcelo was maybe better in terms of just the efficiency at 48%. It was fantastic what he did, and he averaged 9 points a game, nearly 2 assists a game, and 3 rebounds. The guy is a bulldog is what they call him, and I think he's going to be fantastic for BYU. I feel like he's going to be an all-conference performer this upcoming season. Really excited what Alex Barcelo will do this upcoming year for BYU Hoops.
Yeah, that's a great choice. I think one of the reasons, too, I'm optimistic that McClung didn't choose BYU is because now I want Barcelo. I don't want him to share. I don't want to be a combo guard. I want him to be the point guard, give us 30 minutes a night. He's easily the best pick-and-roll defender on the team. I mean, Coach Pope praised his ability to defend the pick-and-roll. And then, as you mentioned, Mitch, expanding that offensive repertoire, which we saw glimpses of his ability to score the ball. But now we're going to see it much more in that TJ Haws role where he's going to be in the pick-and-roll. He's going to be handling the ball a lot more than he did. That's exciting. And I also think, too, and this hasn't really been discussed a whole lot, but if now that we know that Barcelo was injured in the WCC tournament, if he's healthy, I feel like BYU beat St. Mary's in that first round. We didn't know how hurt he was, and he didn't look very good in that St. Mary's game, and now we know why. And he was an instrumental part to that team, and his role is going to expand this next season. I think that's a great choice.
Yeah, and you think back to some games against Utah State where maybe offensively didn't have a huge impact, but then late in the game he comes up with a big shot to give BYU a big win over a Utah State team who was headed to the NCAA tournament. So, yeah, Alex Barcelo, and I think he's like a work guy. He loves the grind. He loves the whole aspect of doing work when no one's watching type thing. That's Alex Barcelo. I think he's going to thrive next year in his senior season with the Cougars.
For football, and this one was difficult because you think star, I mean, it's easy to choose a quarterback, and maybe you did, but I feel like Zach Wilson is kind of already there. I mean, he definitely can perform better, and his star status would increase, but well, I'm looking for new guys who are going to be new on the scene. And the guy that I came up with, I was looking at the roster. I think a person that is ready to launch is Chaz Ayu, the linebacker. And the reason I say Chaz is because I think that the linebacker position outside of quarterback, that has been probably the second most glamorous position at BYU historically. There's been some great, great linebackers out of BYU, and especially recently, Kyle Van Noy, Fred Warner, they've made it to the league, and they've excelled in the NFL. And when I look at that linebacker group, I think Chaz Ayu has the greatest potential to be like one of those guys, and with a big season, because last year, he had some moments last year, but only 24 total tackles. He had the one interception, so he is still primed to break out, and if he does, I think that would launch him into another level of stardom for that linebacker group and defensively as well.
Yeah, you saw plays last year from Chaz Ayu that he's got, you know, Fred Warner-like ability. He's got just that playmaking ability that we've seen from some of the great linebackers in recent years at BYU. That's a great pick. For me, I'm going to go to the offensive side of the ball for BYU. And it's a guy that hasn't really even played in a game.
Oh,
but he's going
he
is going to be a star this year, and he's going to be a household name. And honestly, I think in 2021 and beyond, people will not be asking who's the next Matt Bushman. It'll already be there in the building. It's Isaac Rex. Isaac Rex is going to be big time. I get nervous to put this hype on these guys, but hey, I think Isaac Rex is just that good. 6'6". He's got the size, the measurables of a tight end. He's going to give BYU the versatility to have that 12 personnel look with two tight ends, and things are going to be opened up for him because so much attention will be given to Matt Bushman. Isaac Rex will create the best tight end tandem BYU has had since Atula Mealy and Chad Lewis. I'm telling you right now, Isaac Rex is going to be big time. I talked to Aaron Roderick back in February, the passing game coordinator at BYU, and he told me Isaac Rex is already one of the best players in the football program right now. And that was back in February. So I'm expecting big things from Isaac Rex. Matt Bushman is the best tight end this year, and then right after him is Isaac Rex, and I think Isaac Rex will continue that tight end tradition well into the future. He is going to be a big-time player for BYU in the future.
I love that choice. I remember being down there for the 6 spring practices, and you were there for a few, but then you got sent down to Vegas for a month-long residency, which got cut short a little bit there at the end. But I remember being like, man, this guy is exceptional. And I'm just crossing my fingers, knocking on wood, that BYU harkens to olden times and say, can we get the Pitta-George combination here? Because if Isaac Rex is throwing the football often, I think it's going to take pressure off Matt Bushman. Because last year it was Matt Bushman and nobody else, and it made he was double teamed all the time, and he's got to deal with that because he's that good. But if you bring in a guy like Isaac Rex who can take some pressure off, it opens up the whole offense. And so if Isaac Rex can become a star, and I think he can be, I'm with you, Mitch. I think he can. Wow, that really adds another element to this team next season.
And you look at that tight end room as a whole. I mean, Hank Tuipulotu, he's coming back from a second ACL. What can you reasonably expect from him? But he was someone last year at fall camp before he went down with a season-ending injury, was kind of in that number two tight end role behind Matt Bushman. And then you also bring back from a mission Bentley Hanshaw, who's the son to Doug Hanshaw, good BYU genes there.
Can't forget Dallin Holker either.
Yeah, well, Dallin Holker, he's going to go – he'll be back in 2021, and then you also have Carter Wheat. So BYU has got some great tight ends. That's been one of the positives under Kalani Sitake. From where they were in 2016, where there was really no tight ends to speak of, to now, it's a position of strength. Right there with offensive line, tight end is an area where BYU will have a lot of success. And I think it'll open up things for open up space for the wide receivers, too. Guys like Cody Epps underneath, who I think has potential star ability. But I hesitate to give a true freshman who hasn't even had a day of practice yet at BYU any sort of star accolades. But I think he's going to be an instant impact player. Gunnar Romney, Neil Powell. So I like the potential of BYU's offense. And I think it starts with the offensive line, the tight ends, and the quarterbacks. Those three areas, I feel really good about BYU heading into 2020.
One of my I briefly thought about this, and then I couldn't do it. Dark horse star, Jackson McChesney, just because reminds me of Luke Staley. But the I don't know if he's got that charismatic personality that some of the other stars of BYU has had, but he's got the game where if he were to hit, I mean, imagine if he had a couple thousand-yard seasons under his belt, he'd be a star.
I'll tell you what, Jackson McChesney not playing against San Diego State and Hawaii, It was one of the more confusing things I had seen, you know, last season. I mean, has that huge game against UMass, and I know it's UMass, but still, I've seen many BYU games against bad teams, and there's not many guys that can pop off a record-setting 200-plus-yard day against those bad teams. Jackson McChesney's good, and whatever reason, he didn't get that playing time after that big performance. Hopefully, he gets more opportunities in 2020.
All right, we got to take another break. 2 hours down here on Cougar Sports Saturday, the final show in the month of May. We'll revisit a great Cougar classic, the win over USC last season on the other side. Stay with us here. More to go. Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, welcome in. Welcome on in to Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio, and it's always powered by KSLSports.com. Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. The show is rolling along on this Saturday afternoon. KSL News time is 2:21 p.m., and on the show, throughout the past few weeks, we've been revisiting some great BYU football wins of the past. This is actually the last week we're going to be doing the Cougar Classic segment hour here on Cougar Sports Saturday, and this week we're spotlighting the 2019 win over USC.
That was a phenomenal moment for BYU football, and I remember going to that game. So BYU has the incredible Tennessee win where they literally snatched victory out of the jaws of defeat with that Hail Mary to Micah Simon. So you come into this game and you're thinking, well, USC, they've got a true freshman quarterback, Keaton Slovis, and they're ranked, and you're like, BYU's at home, USC's good, but they don't necessarily scare me. If you get a win here, this could propel you to something really special this season. And the lead up to that game, there was just a really good feeling amongst the program, because after that Utah loss, it wasn't feeling great. And if you lose to Tennessee, then you're looking at we talked about this. Could they go 0-4? It's a tough September, 0-4. And they get Tennessee leading up to that USC game. And you're like, if they get USC, they can be 3-1 or 2-2 coming out of September. That's better than really anyone thought that they would finish after that time. And so it was a really big opportunity for this program, and especially for Coach Satake, where I don't want to say he was on the hot seat, but you were like, he's got to get some big wins. And then he gets Tennessee and then USC. It was big time for this program.
Yeah, it was, because the program was a little bit dejected after that Utah loss because that was the first time in a while that Utah just kind of handled BYU in terms of the score. Now, there was some close, you know, that pick six where was Wilson's knee down, but for the most part, Utah just kind of handled BYU. But then fast forward 2 weeks later and you're hosting USC, you got a little bit of momentum after that win over Tennessee. And honestly, going into that game, I thought, man, this is going to be tough, because USC looks like they're getting back on track because they had that huge win the week prior over Stanford. They were undefeated. They were ranked, and things appeared to be trending up again for USC. But BYU just had an excellent scheme in place to handle the air raid offense of USC. And that's the one thing to keep in mind with this game, was that last year was USC's first season incorporating the air raid offense, which was so unusual for USC, because when you think of USC football, you think of pro style, you think of great running backs, and for them to go air raid was just so unusual. But BYU's scheme of dropping back eight guys worked masterfully against USC, forcing them to run the football, and gave Keaton Slovis a lot of issues during that game.
Yeah, and it was so interesting. I remember, well, obviously watching it, but then rewatch. I mean, that's a classic BYU win. So any really big BYU fans probably rewatched that game multiple times, like you and I have, Mitch. But I remember in that game, that opening drive where USC just kind of marched down the field and scored, and I'm like, oh man, this air raid offense, can just BYU have an answer for it? Because that opening drive, it looked like USC was going to have their way with BYU.
Yeah, it really did. And I thought that, you know, BYU came into that game, you know, BYU's been like a slow starting team, it seems like, under Sotake. It's just been kind of a theme. For whatever reason, they start slow. It's just kind of my general feeling. I'd have to kind of dive into the numbers more a little bit to kind of see the trends, and it might be something I need to look at. But that was something where they just did not get off to a good start, and USC moved down the field, and you thought, man, this is going to be a tough road to hoe for this BYU defense, who still, even up to that point was just not creating any sort of pressure, even against Tennessee, a little bit against Tennessee in the fourth quarter, but for the most part, through eight quarters of play, they were not getting much pressure against Huntley and Jarrett Guarantano of Tennessee, so there wasn't much expectation for BYU's defense to really contain USC's high-powered attack, but they proved us all wrong.
Yeah, they certainly did, and one of the, I think, biggest takeaways from that game, and I think something that's synonymous for me is we had a really interesting, at that time here on the show, the games kept interrupting Cougar Sports Saturday, so it felt like we never got a chance to talk about these games, and we were doing podcasts at the time, and another shameless plug for the show, but even when we don't have a show, we're putting out content for you on the podcast feed and in written form on KSLSports.com, so head there, subscribe, read what we put out there, but I remember going to that game, and it's like, well, USC is so, you know, the talent gap, the recruiting classes, yeah, they're not firing at all cylinders because of Clay Helton and the disarray with the coaching staff, but I don't think BYU can overcome the talent. And then after that first drive, BYU settles in, and you have that amazing interception by Peyton Wilgar, and then you felt like, wow, BYU turned the field, momentum's in their favor, they're at home, and then you really start to feel like, this is going to be another close football game that if BYU makes some plays, they can win this game. And it didn't really feel that way heading into the game. And especially after the first drive, you just felt like, well, can BYU even hang around? But that I think that interception by Wilgar really changed everything for that game.
And these are the scheduling agreements, too, that I think, you know, kind of define BYU football independence. Because I remember back when Bronco was the head coach in 2013, it was media day. This series, this three-game series against USC was announced, and it took, you know, six long years to actually host USC. And the brand of USC, even when they're down, like USC kind of was, I mean, USC the previous year in 2018, they were 5-7, a lot of heat around Clay Helton's seat in L.A. And, you know, but to take down USC, a brand like that, and back-to-back weeks take down Tennessee and USC, it's crazy to me, Matt, to think that a BYU football season with wins over those type of programs, regardless of how good or how what they become in their respective years, to take down those programs and only end up with seven wins, it's mind-blowing to me. But in those moments, these wins against the likes of USC, like we're discussing right now, that was huge. And this is why independence is a great thing for BYU, because it gives you these opportunities to play these type of programs week in, week out, and you saw progress from that week one loss to Utah, week two pulling the win out of the jaws of defeat, and then week three having a really, I thought, impressive performance offensively and defensively. You saw progress, and that was one of the fun things to see, despite the tough schedule, that BYU was making progress each and every week.
Yeah. And when I think back upon that season, that USC win, in terms of, was USC the best team BYU played? No, they weren't. But that USC win, when you think about the special teams, Jake Oldroyd was really solid in that game. Defensively, outstanding. Offensively, really, really did a nice job. There was a few missed opportunities here and there, but for the most part, if you're getting that offensive performance week in and week out, you can win. You can have a 10-win season with that, yep, with that type of performance. That, to me, feels like one of the more complete team performances of the entire season.
And it shows, too, what Kalani Sitake teams are capable of. I think, you know, these are the type of results BYU fans have clamored for a long period of time, like showing up for the big games. BYU has shown a tendency to show up and win and deliver big results in the big games. It's now finishing off the games where maybe you're not as hyped about, you know, because we heard things about, you know, the Hawaii Bowl and guys were maybe just kind of viewing it as a vacation. You can't do that. But when BYU is dialed in under Sitake, they have shown an ability to deliver and win the big game. So that's something to build off of going into 2020, because it highlights, this win over USC highlights what these players are capable of. Because you look down the roster, most of these guys are back. You know, Zach Wilson's back, Dax Milne, he's back, Peyton Wilgar, Isaiah Kafusi. You lose Tyson Williams, which is a big loss, but you know, there's a lot of guys that have that returning experience, that experience great wins like this. Now can they do it every single week against maybe an even tougher schedule than 2020.
We got to take a break here on Cougar Sports Saturday. We're going to have an update on the protests happening here in Salt Lake City with news, traffic, and weather. That's coming up next. Stay with us. More to go here on Cougar Sports Saturday.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday. We're still revisiting, for the final time, we're revisiting great BYU wins. We're calling them Cougar Classics. It's our final one because we're going to start to shift towards the future. And we're going to start breaking down the opponents, the players, the position groups as we get ready for a 2020 season. And with Mitch, the workout, the voluntary workouts, the facilities being opened on Monday, June 1st, nothing's official, but all, I think, signs indicate towards we're trending in a great direction for college football.
We definitely are, and I think that's a good thing. As we've gathered more information during this COVID-19 pandemic, I think more individuals are well-educated on, you know, what this virus, who it impacts, and how to maybe the measures to take to prevent it. And I think that, you know, this state has done a fantastic job, and BYU has been monitoring the situation, and they're going to give the opportunity to their athletes to have those voluntary workouts. And as you heard from Kalani Sitake in the show today, he expects about 90%, or believes rather, that about 90% of the roster will be there on Monday to get ready for the voluntary workouts, because, you know, the facility has not been open since March 12th. So it's going to be important for these guys to get back at it. They've been handling things on their own. They've been empowered to take things on their own. They've been given, you know, workout regimens from regimes from Nuu to Feecy, but ultimately it's been on them to take care of their bodies and to handle their own personal workouts to make sure they're in the best shape possible to get ready for the 2020 season. And that's honestly how it should be during this time of social distancing.
Yeah, and I love that it's up to the players. I mean, they have all the support they need, but ultimately they know what's best for them and what kind of equipment they have or don't have and what needs to be tweaked. So I commend Coach Itake and the staff for putting together a plan during a crazy and difficult time that I think will be beneficial for all the players.
Yeah, I think it will be. And I think that, you know, these BYU players that you mentioned earlier, they've had the chance to actually get some spring practices, six of them, and compared to a lot of teams where they had zero spring practices. A lot of programs like the one BYU will face in week two, Michigan State, they have a new head coach, and he has not had the opportunity to conduct one practice yet overseeing his program. So that's going to be a tough road for Michigan State and new head coaches around the country to try and navigate this and have their best product put forward in 2020. So BYU's got a little bit of an upper hand on some programs, and will it result in a few additional wins? We will see.
It's hard to believe that we're handing out our final Norm Chow and Andrew George Awards. It's been a lot of fun these last couple of months revisiting these wins. And the purpose of these awards is we want to look at these games as we rewatch them, not to point out the obvious. I mean, in most of these wins, I think we'd agree offensively, Zach Wilson is probably the best player for BYU against USC. It doesn't, you know, doesn't take a rocket scientist to make that observation. Of
rewatching
nice the
move game. There. Nice move there. SpaceX, rocket science. Okay, I see you.
So the purpose of these awards is to dig a little deeper. And so we'll start with the Norm Chow Award, which the intent of the award is to find a moment or a play or a call in the game that we think had an impact. And I'll start things off with my Norm Chow Award. I'm giving it to Jeff Grimes and Tyson Williams. So Peyton Wilgar gets that interception in the first quarter, kind of swings the momentum. The ensuing play is this call from the offense.
Tyson Williams, the tailback to the left hip of Zach Wilson. He's got a tight end and two wides to his right, and the run is to the right. The reverse to Levehifo. No, it's a fake from Tyson. Tyson takes it to the 10, to the 5, out of bounds, just shy of the goal line. They faked the reverse. Tyson kept it as Hefo came across his face, and Tyson all the way down to the 2-yard line. It'll be a 26-yard run for Tyson Williams.
almost a perfect play, except for Tyson could have ran into the end zone, and then he went to the right side of the block and then couldn't get into the end zone. But I loved that play call there. And it did seem, upon rewatching some of these games, that there was a significant a step in the right direction in terms of trying to be explosive and being creative offensively.
Yeah, definitely did. And Tyson Williams, this was his, I think, best game as a BYU Cougar. I know it was brief, and it was only about three and a half games. But this was his best game, in my opinion. He got around 100 yards on the ground and was just fantastic. And it made you think, man, if BYU gets through these four games against Power 5 teams, this guy is going to be putting up insane numbers against the likes of Toledo and USF. But I digress. I mean, that's what could have been, I guess you could say. For me, my Norm Chow Award was the trick play between Jaron Hall and Zach Wilson. Not many times do you see a pass play connected between two quarterbacks, but Jaron Hall throws a pass to Zach Wilson 19 yards. I thought that play call was fantastic, and it showed a little bit of creativity and also showed, like, hey, BYU can utilize both Jaron Hall and Zach Wilson. Last preseason, it was discussed they could use both those guys, and they showed it in that game against USC.
Well, and interesting enough that you mentioned that, Mitch, because it's sort of the same play that they ran on the Tyson run. They have the reverse. In this case, it's Jaron Hall coming across, and they give it to him, and then Wilson kind of sneaks out. But it was a similar sort of mechanic, right, as the Tyson fake reverse to Aleva Hifo. This time it's Jaron Hall, and you add that screw to it, and now he's holding on to it, and now, Zach Wilson's down the field. So, we talked about, Matt mentioned play calling, but, you know, taking that same sort of format and tricking the defense with that again, doing something different with it and having success is a great, great play.
And also honorable mention, not an easy pass as Jaron Hall is rolling to his left, has to turn his entire body and delivers a pretty good pass, all considering the circumstances, to Wilson. Yeah, that was a great moment. I do think we're not going to see any of those this year, though.
Yeah.
I don't think with Jaron Hall's pass that you can play around with that kind of stuff, because if he takes a big shot on a trick play like that, you'd hate to see that.
Yeah, you got to avoid that one. My Norm Chow play of the game, I'm going with, this one's pretty easy, but it was Zach Wilson's touchdown pass in the second quarter to Dax Milne.
Zach Gunn, play fake to Tyson. Zach throws to the 10, to the 5, caught at the goal line. Touchdown, Cougars! Touchdown, Cougars! And Dax Milne puts the Cougars back on top.
You know, and it was... This may have been the best throw Zach made all year. I mean, this was incredible. He laid it right in the basket. Dax Milne, you know, he beats his defender on a streak. He has that little bit of separation. Zach sees it. It's a 3rd and 5. They're in field goal range, I think, right about there. So they could have gone for it, but he takes the shot at the end zone. His wide receiver has that little opening, and he laid it right in there. And that play puts BYU up 17-10 in the second quarter, and, you know, kind of, it was a dogfight all game, but I felt like that was a big blow at that point to say, "Hey, we're not going away. We're coming back. We're sending shots back, and we're sticking in this game."
Well, and it highlighted too, guys, the explosive playmaking ability that we had heard a lot about in fall camp that year. We heard a lot about explosive plays, and we actually saw a little bit of a taste of that in that play against Dax Milne, or with Dax Milne rather, and Zach Wilson. Because against Tennessee, we saw the big home run ball to Mike Simon, but that was just kind of a heave, and Zach Wilson saw something open up and his eyes widened and just chucked it downfield. It wasn't necessarily within the offense. It just kind of broke BYU's way, whereas that Dax Milne play was like, okay, this is a breakthrough for the offense that they need, and they can have these big plays. Because you got to remember too, like, BYU football fans have seen some pretty bad offenses the past few years. They just really have. Last year was a step in the right direction, 26th nationally in passing yardage, but 2018, 2017, even 2016 with Taysom and Jamal, the offenses just haven't been great. And so that moment was a really good play, and just something that Cougar fans hadn't experienced much, where they see a big explosive play against a good USC team. It was fun to see.
And you know what I loved about that play too is, and it was a touchdown shot, an explosive play kind of scripted within the offense, because a lot of times with Zach in particular where he's dancing around,
yeah,
and that's where the explosive play comes. I want to see the offense and Zach have more of those type of explosive plays where here's the play call, we take a chance, we see a moment, and it's everything's in sync. Rather, and later in the game, there was a great play where Zach eluded a sack and threw it down to Gunnar Romney, and that's great. I like those explosive plays too, but I want to see more of what we saw where it's here's the play call, three-step drop, boom, we're throwing it down to Dax Mills. Oh, here's another play call, deep shot here, rather than always having to improvise and scramble around.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and I think that's where that's where Zach Wilson's got to improve.
Yep.
In his game in 2020. I think improvising, he's brilliant at that.
Totally.
That's why he's drawn some comparisons to the, I don't know if we can say this, but the Mormon Manziel. Like that's he's had those comparisons. It's fair because he can do a lot and improvise on the run and make something happen when it's not there. And that's a great ability to have in your quarterback, but he's also got to have that timing down. And when he works with guys like John Beck, you think of John Beck in 06, and his timing was incredible. The ball was there in a spot for the receiver before they even made a break on their route. And when they turned, the ball would be there. The timing was masterful with John Beck in those offenses, and maybe some of that can rub off of Zach Wilson. I think there'll be improvements this year. I really do. I think Zach's due for a lot more games this year, similar to what we saw against USC. I really think he's due for a big bounce back season coming up in 2020.
I want to see less of the Mormon Manziel and more of John Beck in Zach Wilson, and we'll see if that happens. We've got one more award to give out. We'll give it out on the other side. Stay with us. We'll be back after this.
Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. Matt and I have been hosting this show now for a year. It's officially 1 year.
Wow.
This is the, after this show is completed, we will have now completed 1 year of shows. I started up, it was like June 8th was our first show. So next week we'll kind of mark the 1 year anniversary. But 1 year of shows. We've had a lot of twists and turns, from no shows because of BYU football playing in the afternoons again, to a pandemic and some great basketball wins, some great football wins, some heartbreak. There's been everything thrown in. It's been a fun year so far,
Matt. It's been a fun year. You got the USC win, which we're finishing up. You got the Gonzaga win in hoops.
That's right.
Yoli Childs, coming back from suspension. Coach Pope, Coach Satake. We've had some great guests on the show. It's been an awesome year. We have great things planned going forward. So keep listening. For those of you who do listen, we appreciate it. Keep on listening. Tell your friends. Subscribe to the podcast. We got great things planned here on Cougar Sports Saturday.
Yeah, next week we're going to start our 2020 preview, season previews with positions, opponent previews, a lot of different stuff to give you a deep dive into everything that you need to know for the 2020 BYU football season, because we're going to be optimistic. We're going to be positive and believe that the football season will start on time. And like you said, Matt, I think it is going to start on time. So we're keeping that positivity up here on Cougar Sports Saturday. But we got to wrap up our Cougar Classic segment here, revisiting the 2019 USC win with the Andrew George Award, which is given to someone who's underrated from that game. So, Producer Down, we'll start off with you. Who's your Andrew George Award?
All right, this one was pretty easy for me, if I'm being honest, after rewatching this game. I'm going to go with Diane Gunwalaku.
Was that underrated, though?
And this is what I'm looking at, okay? I didn't pick him because of the interception in overtime. I didn't pick him because of the touchdown run that he also had, which I actually forgot about.
Yeah,
I was like,
point.
Oh, yeah, he also scored a touchdown. But it was rewatching this game, he was matched up against Michael Pittman Jr. all game. And Michael Pittman Jr. is now an NFL wide receiver, second-round pick for the Colts.
High second-round pick.
Very talented wide receiver. And that was Diane's assignment all day. Follow that guy around and try to just do what you can. And it was so much fun watching that matchup. And I think Diane did a pretty good job against an NFL wide receiver in Pittman.
I still don't agree with that controversial Pittman touchdown over him.
I don't care what anyone says. I thought it when I saw it live, and I thought it when I saw it again. That was not a touchdown. Pittman pushed off. And luckily, Dion gets the redemption with the sideline catch that Pittman actually made that they called incomplete.
That's true.
Got a little one back there. But I thought Dion did an incredible job against Michael Pittman, really made his job difficult. And that is not an easy assignment by any means. And so to do what he did against that level of talent, and then on top of that, the game-winning interception in overtime, incredible stuff. So Dion, that was my player of the game.
And I like that pick a lot, Dallin. I think that's a good one. Even though at first I thought, he got the game-winning INT. How is that underrated? Yeah. But I think you make a great point there about all the impact that he had and the challenge who he faced. Michael Pittman was a heck of a player at USC. For me, guys, it's Lorenzo Fauatea. And if you remember, Pro Football Focus the following Monday after this game, they had him as like the second highest graded defensive lineman in college football. For his performance against USC, even higher graded than Kyrus Tonga. Lorenzo Fauatea showed his potential and his ability to be maybe potentially a next level talent. Maybe when everything goes its way, his way, he was fantastic in this game. He had three tackles, one sack, one tackle for loss, and pair him and Kyrus Tonga on a defensive line when they are playing at their best. This is a 1-2 tandem that could be a force to be reckoned with that no one wants to mess with. And I think Lorenzo Fauatea was an underrated performer that I think even Cougar fans still don't respect enough or kind of give enough credit to. Fauatea, I think, is going to be really good for BYU in 2020. He's battled some injuries the past few years, and that's set him back. Like last year in November against Utah State, he missed that game due to an injury. He's got to stay healthy. And if he does, I think that Fauatea has got the potential to be maybe a late round draft pick. Maybe he's got the technique. He's a really good lineman, and I'm excited to see what he can be. But 2019 against USC highlights Lorenzo Fauatea's potential.
I'm going to stick on the defensive line for my Andrew George Award, and I'm going to Kyrus Tonga.
Great pick.
If I remember correctly, I think he was battling some injuries at this time.
He was,
and so I don't think we were sure if he was going to be able to go and to what capacity he'd be able to go, and he was a monster in that game. Four tackles, tackle for loss, couple pass breakdowns. He was just disruptive all game long. And when you look at that performance, if you can get more consistency out of that and from guys like Fauatea and El Bakary, if you can get more of that, then it changes the way you can play defense because they were getting pressure with three. And then they just completely closed the lanes with the linebacking pass defense in the zone. So, I agree with you, Mitch. When you look at the film, if they can get more games like that, those are NFL guys, Kyrus Tonga and Fauatea. The question, for the entire program, is consistency. And we're going to see if they can dial that in this year. But if they can be more consistent and the team can be more consistent, we're going to see more NFL players and more wins.
Yeah, and they dominated a banged-up USC offensive line that had two guys that were backups starting in that game. So, and they dominated them like they were inferior players to Tonga and Fauatea. So I think it just speaks to their potential, what they could be. And I think that this year, curious to see where Kyrus Tonga's at health in terms of his playing weight. The coaches want him anywhere from 320 to 329, a little bit higher than what they were wanting him at last year. But I think, having him at 310 was maybe a little bit unrealistic. 320 is kind of the goal, I think, on the low end for Kyrus Tonga. And Lorenzo Fauatea is kind of a hybrid D lineman for BYU. He could play a little bit of in the interior. He could also play as maybe a five-tech DN if need be. So Fauatea is very versatile. Tonga's more that guy that can fill the gaps in the middle of the defensive line. But I like the potential of those two. They just got to get more consistent, like you said. And if they can, they could be NFL players in the future.
Man, this show, like all shows, they're just flying by. We had the SpaceX launch. That was really cool. Kalani Sitake had some great comments. You can find that on the podcast feed. These shows are just zipping by. Even during a pandemic where you think topics might be a little light, BYU continues to produce great stories.
Yeah, and next week we'll be talking about some maybe basketball transfer news. Davion Williamson's going to be announcing where he'll be committing tomorrow, so be on the lookout for that on KSLSports.com. We'll talk about all the latest with recruiting and basketball. But then, like I said earlier, 2020 season preview content going to start rolling out next week here on Cougar Sports Saturday. We'll go neck deep, just in-depth position previews and all the latest news and notes around BYU sports. So be on the lookout next week here on Cougar Sports Saturday.
Stay safe, everybody. Man, it's been a warm day, as you heard on news, traffic, and weather. Getting warm, so enjoy the warm weather. Stay safe, social distance, do everything you can to make the world a better place. Thanks for listening to Cougar Sports Saturday. It's always fun, and if you missed any of the show, as we said, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can subscribe to the show. Head over to kslsports.com. There's great content there. Mitch Harper, he has a lot of great BYU content there. You can follow him on Twitter, Mitch_Harper. Follow me, Biamonte Matt, KSL Sports. Follow Instagram, Twitter. We're putting out great stuff there all the time. So have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you next week.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.